One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
14, 1-4, that's the magic number. Why is that the magic number? Because we've got Chloe Rose in the house with us, so to speak. We've got Jessica Burtis, we've got Tara Bennett. And Tara, it's the magic number because 14 is the number of pages you have got in the latest edition of SFX magazine. Yes, 14, 1-4.
When we come, I know, it's probably one of the largest features I've done in a while, but WandaVision and the return of Marvel Studios in 2021 deserves it.
Precisely, an absolutely outstanding series, which we will be reviewing in Resonance Rewind, which brings us neatly to the other American on the call today, Jessica Burtis from North Carolina. How are you, Jessica?
Hi, I'm doing pretty well.
Marvellous. And indeed, keeping the British end up, because she's also got a very exciting event happening in a matter of days from now. Yes, I know you've had an inauguration of a new president, Joe Biden, and a new vice president, Kamala Harris, in the United States. But even more exciting than that is Chloe Rose has got a new single release that comes to the world on the 23rd. Yay!
I am so excited.
So
I can't
we'll
wait.
We'll be circulating that as well. But let's go to you first, Tara, because I know we've got to sort of keep it fairly tight today because you've got all sorts of things to happening from that point of view. Both of your sort of reviews in SFX magazine, one, a superb show, which is WandaVision, absolutely cracking in every sense of the word. And the other one, of course, season two of Batwoman. And it's fair to say already the ratings are tanking for season two. It's looking as though it could well be problematic, but we appreciate you're going to be objective to the nth degree for this whole routine and so on. WandaVision just seems to have got everything right. I've seen the first two episodes. Everything seems to be fantastic on that basis. Batwoman, I don't know. I just don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's I watched a lot of season one and it was very dark. It was a kind of a relentlessly dark take, and you know, some of that came with Kate Kane's kind of background, and it came with how they portrayed Gotham. But it doesn't necessarily, you know, it may fit the narrative, but it wasn't a fun show to watch. And I would have to say that Javicia's Ryan Wilder, who's the new woman in the cowl, is certainly has more of a cheeky nature to herself, which is great. We had a big football, the wrong football, the one in the air instead of the feet, playing up against it when it premiered on Sunday. And that's a big reason why it didn't get a lot of live viewers. Interestingly enough, the network that it runs on here in the United States is called the CW, which has all the DC Universe shows. And they do really well with their demographic watching it afterwards on their app. And it actually, I think, is going to get +7, which is how, you know, they rate ratings now instead of just night of. They check and see how people are watching in +7 days, 1 week. And I think that the numbers are going to go up quite a bit just for people even wanting to give it a try, see what the next version of the storytelling looks like. You know, from there, it really will determine how does it look, how is it going to, will people stay for episode two and on. I definitely think that, you know, it feels like a show that would be more fun to watch. It certainly has a lot of the really heavy themes and a lot of the, you know, very kind of baton passed villainous kind of things. Alice is still there. She's, you know, kind of transferring her anger that she had about the Kate Kane situation to the situation that happens with Ryan. Ryan has her own personal axe to grind with Alice and others. So, you know, there'll still be some intensity, but I feel like her performance will loosen it up a little bit. But, you know, ultimately where it goes as a show is, you know, I think the first season needed some work. So hopefully this, you know, will almost be like a new pilot where you give it a couple episodes, see how it breathes, and then we'll go from there and see what it really looks like and if it should still be around.
It's fair to say that certainly the fandom vultures on Nerdrotic and various other sort of YouTube channels, they're not liking it. They are not liking it. But never mind. We'll step away from that because we like to accentuate the positive. And that's why Jessica Burtis is with us. And in terms of that, Jessica, just for information, for Chloe and Tara, Jessica and myself have just come out of a Resonance Rewind, which is our weekly review of various sort of shows, times past, etc., where we were looking back at the 1970s iteration of Logan's Run in the TV series with Heather Menzies, Donald Moffat, and, of course, Gregory Harrison in the lead role. Gregory's still with us just about. Jessica and I liked it for all the positive side of things. But on the other side, it was given a caning by our alliance for that. I mean, Tara, are you familiar with the 1970s Logan's Run, the TV series?
Yeah, I am. It's of its time. It certainly has a very lo-fi kind of look to it for something that's supposed to be quite futuristic. budgetary issues were very apparent. but there is some interesting storytelling. You know, I think it definitely opened up the path for many shows that were inspired by it and that had a kernel of a really great idea. And, you know, we're still talking about it in 2021, you know, so, you know, there's no show that you can completely wipe off the chart that is still talked about today and has, its, you know, strong fan base. So, like, you know, respect. To the run.
There we are, Jessica. You see, so those shiny, sparkly costumes and the parrots, yes. And of course, Angela Cartwright. It's worth accessing. That's the important thing.
I wouldn't be caught dead in it. I'm with you on that. There's no way I'm putting any of those costumes on. But yeah, definitely, it hasn't weathered in some areas very well at all.
Yeah, I don't know, Tara. I think you look pretty good in a Sandman costume. I think, you know, it would be work from that point of view. I mean, if Ruby Rose can actually handle Batwoman, I'm sure you could actually go Sandwoman. You know, it's a different line still.
If this quarantine keeps going, you may see me there in another month. I'm losing my mind. So.
Now, we know that Chloe is a passionate Stranger Things aficionado, if only for the lead actress, Millie Bobby Brown, who was given huge kudos for her incarnation of Enola Holmes, which is outstanding stuff from that point of view. But I'm going to actually take that, Chloe, and I'm going to say you'll probably enjoy WandaVision even more in terms of a quality series. If you like Bewitched, if you like the vibe of I Love Lucy and the Marvel Universe, I mean, it does seem, Tara, as though everything has kind of struck gold for this series. I mean, I know we've had one or two slot mild critics, but it certainly seems to be providing a brightness that, shall we say, I had thought that Greg Berlanti had actually changed his tone with respect to Supergirl and so on. Clearly no. But in terms of that sort of CW Arrowverse, you know, Marvel seems to be getting it right once again. Is it just the magic of Kevin Feige?
I think it's a mixture of a couple things. I think, it has a global fandom for a reason, you know, 23 films and stories that have all built towards Endgame. And then that was it, you know, a whole year of nothing. And I think people missed it a lot. You and I have talked often about how I've been working for 4 years on this Marvel Studios book. And even I got choked up when that Marvel fanfare started at the beginning of WandaVision, just because it has become for more than a decade now a fixture in our theaters, if you want to go there, at home, you know, even if you dip in and out of it, all of these characters now are really part of our pop culture tapestry. And I think, you know, everybody was really excited to get back to them, to get back to those stories. And I have to hand it to them, you know, merely from a critical standpoint, it did not come back with what everybody expected. They could have easily ridden on 23 very successful films and just done a TV show that looked like the movies. And instead, they have gone completely off the grid in terms of their storytelling. They're challenging the audience. You know, they're challenging the patience of the audience by not telling them even, I've seen 3 episodes. So even in 3 episodes, you don't have a full idea of why we're seeing what we're seeing and what it all ultimately means. And that's awesome. You know, that is what you're looking for storytellers, is to not sit on their laurels. And, you know, ultimately, if, you know, a more casual Marvel Studios person dips in and goes, what is happening? At least, you know, for those that have been all in and emotionally can kind of go with what's happening. It's really satisfying to see something out of the ordinary. And honestly, that's all you can really ask for out of something as big as what Marvel Studios has become, is for them to keep trying. And WandaVision is the absolute, I think, template of what we'd like to see in terms of them wanting to keep trying.
As you say in the opening line, phase four of Marvel Cinematic Universe begins, The Odd Couple. Genius.
Yes, yeah. And it's also great to see two characters that got their moments in the films, but never really got long moments. You know, they are, by the time those two characters were really folded into the storylines, there's too many characters to service in 2.5 hours in any film. So we got glimpses, and you're always, they're such compelling actors that you always did feel like, man, I wonder what else was going on in their life to lead to that little snippet that we get to see in any given movie. And to be able to now really enjoy, which we know are the exceptional talents of Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany as actors, who were always playing relatively serious in all of their film, and to be able to just now in the same universe with the same characters be funny and charming and actually lean into the romance, which, you know, you don't always get much time for in the Marvel Studios films either, is really nice to see. It's servicing something completely different and allowing us to see those actors and those characters in a different light, which again adds to the freshness of what they're trying to do.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. So let's open it up. Jessica, will you be checking out on Disney Plus WandaVision? I know it's scheduled for later on in the year as far as Resonance Rewind is concerned, but I don't know, does it appeal to you?
I would absolutely love to. I think I'm with the majority of people who have just enjoyed the whole Marvel universe so much, and getting to have a new angle to some characters that we love is something that I definitely, definitely want to see. I'm very excited.
Chloe, what about yourself? Will it persuade you to actually switch from Netflix to Disney Plus?
Absolutely. I mean, I am a fan of Marvel anyway. I absolutely love Marvel films. I do like DC, but personally, Marvel's my favourite. And I've actually watched the trailer for WandaVision as well. And one of my friends was telling me to like look at the link and watch it. And I thought, oh, yeah, it does look quite interesting. So it's definitely something that I will be watching. I wanted to ask a question about how... sorry, my mind's gone.
It's okay. It happens in the pandemic.
It's okay. Let's keep going. It's the pandemic. It's fine. But yes.
You'll have the vaccination soon, Chloe. I've no doubt they'll get round to you. It'll happen. You know, all will be well. Jessica, questions from yourself.
Oh, sorry. I'm yawning. what other projects actually are all of you actually looking forward to from Marvel? Because I know that they're coming out with quite a lot, I think, was it? Coming up. Like, are there any characters?
Tara is in the place for, obviously, no spoilers, but she's certainly for the last 4 years been in the place for that. So, yes. What can you say, Tara?
I mean, they released their full slate at San Diego Comic-Con more than a year ago, because there was no San Diego Comic-Con last year. They announced what they intended to do, and then they just... basically confirmed and then added a couple more titles just this December when Disney had basically what they call an investors call, where they just tell everybody what the slate was coming for 2021 and 2022. It is broad and expansive, but I think, you know, based on what they've announced, I'm really excited for She-Hulk, because Tatiana Maslany, who is from Orphan Black, is going to be the lead. She's exceptional. Mark Ruffalo will be part of that as well, which he's announced. And I think those kinds, that caliber of actors is pretty amazing. And then, you know, I think Moon Knight, which has got... Oscar, and it's got I think they just announced forgetting the actor's name, but he's I saw him do Macbeth, and he was just in Good Lord Bird. I'm like blanking also, it's the pandemic, but honestly, when you get that kind of caliber of actor, you know, who've done big things, you know, they don't need to come to Marvel, but to make a choice, which I think speaks really well to how Marvel comes to talent from the very beginning, you know, bringing Robert Downey Jr. in as Iron Man to really establish and set the tone for what they wanted to do with their stories, which was really match content to really talented people, is that They come at them with a really good pitch and go, listen, here's what we want to do. Here's why it's worth your while to come and play with us, even if you don't need to, even if you were burnt by other big blockbusters or other things that disappointed you. We promise to give you a place to play and a place to collaborate. And they just keep winning in terms of the names that they keep announcing in reference to everything that's coming down the pike. So those are two I'm excited for.
Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke.
Thank you. See, and like,
it's what we do. Chloe, have you remembered your question as yet?
Yes. So I wanted to ask, how have you found working during lockdown? How has that been for you? And what's your favorite Marvel character?
Ooh, you guys want to go first?
I think it's aimed at yourself, Tara. Go with that.
It's aimed at me.
Okay. You know, working at home, it's very funny. My husband and I both write, and our lives, especially for the first year, we kind of went, well, we're really good at this because this is kind of like what we do anyway. We work from home. We go out and do meetings. Those just transferred to these kinds of Zoom meetings. But I think, you know, by December, you know, last month, we both were missing really dumb things. Like, I just miss going for a walk. And I just miss going, you know, we live right near Universal Studios. So we used to walk up there with our annual pass. So like just doing the kinds of things that just feel like life. We miss that. But I think that's everybody at this point. And it also, you know, working with collaborators face to face, there's a magic to that. And there's a rapport that you build with people over time. Luckily, the Marvel Studios project is close to being complete. And so we'd already built that for years. So it was a nice, you know, easy transition to go to this kind of dynamic. But you know, I used to go to I'm in Los Angeles, so I used to go to a ton of premieres and a lot of red carpets where I was covering it for work, or I'd go to an event to go interview people. And I miss that. You know, I'm an introvert most of the time, that kicks in the extrovert when I need to. And you find out in a year of not being able to be around people, wow, there's maybe a little more extrovert than I thought there was. So it's it has been a year where I do miss seeing colleagues, seeing other people you haven't seen for a while, being able to just be in the mix of it all. But I'm grateful to still be working, so I'm not going to complain. And I think Marvel character-wise, oh, that's such a good question. I would say, I have a real warmth for Cap, for Chris Evans, Captain America, and I really loved the relationship, yes, that he had with Peggy Carter. So Peggy Carter and Agent Carter, I adored that show, and I adored what she was able to do with that show, and I really loved how they finished their story, per se, at the end of Endgame. But I honestly have so much warmth for, you know, Tom Holland's Spider-Man, who I think is doing just such a wonderful job with that role. And really, to me, feels like absolutely like he's just come off the page and made that such a warm and great character. And he's such a great steward of playing Spider-Man, Peter Parker. And I could keep going, but I think, you know, if I had to, like you've asked, those are ones that are really some of my favorites.
Outrageous. And I can't believe the time has actually sort of beaten us once again, Tara, because we've been scooting by. A reminder, of course, that SFX, the edition which has WandaVision on its front cover, available for subscription to and all sorts of things. Don't go to a newsstand these days. Who knows what could happen with respect to that. Congratulations, of course, to the whole SFX team, Tara, for, unlike lots of other magazines, you've been continuing to publish paper editions through the whole pandemic. So hats off to you guys.
We are so grateful for all of our readers, for those that have stayed with subscribing to us, who have still gone to digital copies, if that's the most convenient way. We want everybody to be safe, but we try to give you as much bang for your buck as possible in those pages, and we deeply appreciate everybody that still has an appreciation for the print, for the story, being able to enjoy flipping through the pages and seeing absolutely the most gorgeous design. I'm so proud of Jonathan Coates and our design team, because they just make every issue look like it's worth putting a couple quid out to grab it. So we appreciate it.
if it's got 14 pages by Tara Bennett, it obviously goes without saying it's worth it from that point of view. That's our official line. Cap actually agrees with us, Captain America. Although I'd have to say that in terms of actually symbols, I noticed with respect to personified mugs, as people will regularly say, you can't go far wrong than the Jack Lord original Steve McGarrett Hawaii Five-O mug, if you there really want to.
Don't we all wish we were in Hawaii right now? I think we all wish we were in Hawaii.
Jessica, would you like to ask Chloe and Tara those last two questions, please? Off you go.
Thank you. Chloe and Tara, have you both had a reasonably interesting Zoomer link with us today?
Absolutely. Yes, it was so lovely to meet the two of you as well. Thank you.
Yeah, it was lovely to meet you.
There you go. We're all waving, which is wonderful. Big waves back. And the final question, Jess, of course, is clearly, will Tara Bennett ever wear the Jessica 7 short skirt from Logan's Run? I don't know. Maybe the next premiere.
That's going to be a lot of booze and a lot of money involved. So.
That's not a no. We'll take that as not a no. It's worthwhile noting. So I take it both Chloe, Jessica, and Tara, you will return?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for accommodating me. I appreciate it.
Tara Bennett, Chloe Rose, and Jessica Burtis, huge thanks. That connects Cleethorpes with North Carolina, with Los Angeles. It's a wonderment. Take care and happy trails.
Thanks, guys. Have a great one. Take care.
Now, clearly, if you're looking for somebody to actually identify new trends or trends in reading and trends in activities and so on, who better than a global executive director extraordinaire with over two decades in media and publishing? We can only be referring to the fabulous managing director and chief content officer of Readly. It's the wonderful Ranj Begley. How are you, Ranj?
I'm good, thank you. And thank you so much for that lovely intro.
Ranj, we knew from last year when you made your debut on the production, you were a special person, and indeed, you've proven to be so, because you're really at the heart of this whole notion of our reading habits. And it seems as though, looking forwards, despite the inauguration and such like, or the inauguration he won't be attending, it's not good news for Donald Trump, is it?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So he is right at the top of the list there in terms of what people don't want to read about. I think people are just fed up, and we found that there was quite a large percentage of people, almost 40% of Brits actually, that said that they want to read less about Donald Trump. And if we're looking across the pond, you only have to look over to Kim and Kanye. People also don't want to read about them either. So they're right at the top of the list.
Of course, there was a suggestion that Kanye might be entering the presidential race himself, really, which could be a whole different line entirely for 2024. But let's not think about that.
No, exactly.
In general, though, is it a case of, do we still read for escapism as opposed to information? Or is it a case of we like both? Or ultimately, it's a case of just bring me more gardening programs and more gardening magazines?
I think it's a combination of both. I think, you know, when we last spoke, it was obviously BC before Corona. Now, you know, the world has changed and people's reading habits have also changed. So back in the day, people would be happy to read a bit of celebrity gossip or even read a long form article on their commute. But now people really want to focus on themselves, and it's all about self-care and inspiring themselves on what's of interest to them. So, you know, the sort of hot category on Readly at the moment is DIY and crafting. I think while people are stuck in their houses, they want to use this opportunity to, you know, do those sort of jobs that they were kind of, that they've just left for ages. And then food and drink, as you know, Alex, has always been a popular category. So people are pulling off more and more recipes and cooking, stuff that inspires them and that's healthy as well. So. Yeah. That category has actually increased as well by almost 40%. And then the one that kind of surprised me is travel. So, you know, we all like to, sort of have a bit of a daydream as to where we can potentially go on holiday. But that category has also increased because people are fed up of being stuck in their homes. They want to be inspired as to what their next holiday destination is going to be. So now is the best time to research. And then when you can jump on that plane, you know, you go to your sort of dream destination.
the heyday in popularity of magazines was very much a phenomenon of the 20th century. But as we head into the third decade now, of course, of the 21st century, it's fair to say that people still have an appetite for reading, but the way in which we consume magazines has kind of gone, and traditionalists of the magazine rack that was very much an essential part of the pre-trade journey from various news agents and so on, although they're still actually there and you can still get physical magazines, and I have to say I still use physical magazines, more and more, of course, of the magazine industry is having to actually offer a good online reading experience as well. I mean, is this matching the popularity and obviously the success of a company like Readly?
Absolutely. I think, you know, putting Corona to one side, I think, you know, the younger generation all want to read online. You know, they're going in and they're using their various different social media channels, but also to sort of pass on to them long form, trusted, curated content. That is so important. You know, so they're not just reading, as Donald Trump would say, fake news, or, you know, sort of stuck in their echo chambers, to actually have that material, that content there for them in a digital format on a device of their choice is so important in this day and age. And, you know, we're talking about the sort of younger generation. We mustn't forget the silver surfers, you know, the guys that are out there, you know, the older generation that are going in and reading content that or subjects that they have also always been inspired by, and that they're interested in, anything from sort of farming to food to, you know, keeping pets, etc. There's just such a wide variety of titles that the young and the old can read, because Readly stimulates consumption.
And presumably archiving is also relatively straightforward as well, when you start talking about obviously looking back over that magazine that we really want to actually sort of keep for posterity's sake and so on.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you like collecting, it's definitely, you know, you can have all your magazines, all your old back issues, as we call them in the industry, will all be available on Readly as well. I think the other thing is, if you were doing, say, a search, it's a little bit like having Google search on Readly. If you did, for instance, search for, I don't know, Prince William, using him as an example, Readly allows you to, it basically brings up every single article related to Prince William across 5,000 magazines. So, you know, you might be sort of pulled into an issue that was created, I don't know, 2 years ago. So that's still there and you can go in. And again, you know, it allows you to read at your own pace and at your own leisure. So yeah, all the archive material is there for you.
And what are your own particular habits, Ranj? I mean, are you, again, a secret cookery scenario, or is it a case of, no, I want more sort of hard-hitting political news, or indeed CEO executive news?
None of the above. None of the above, I can tell you. My passion is interiors. Obviously, of course, I read all the business press, etc., and the newspapers on the platform. But I love reading all the interior titles, you know, so The World of Interiors, 25 Beautiful Homes. I'm always tapping into them, getting some form of inspiration. So that's my passion. And that passion is definitely satisfied on Readly, because we've got hundreds of them. So, you know, if you want to know about sort of Scandi interiors, we've got loads of Scandinavian titles based around that subject matter, and likewise, you know, American as well. So, you know, I can read to my heart's content, or just look at pictures. I do that quite a lot as well.
Well, there is, of course, a line, Ranj, that says that ultimately when we're actually looking at pictures, it's almost going back to our prehistoric ancestors, where they were just drawing pictures, and all those pictures, yeah, on the walls that we see in caves from the prehistoric era were simply early versions of "Let's get on to Readly." But that's another line entirely.
I like that. I'm going to use that. That's really good.
How can people get in touch with Readly and indeed find and make use of some of the fantastic offers that indeed are available from the online service?
Yeah, so you just go onto readly.com or your app store, depending on what device you're on, and then just download the app. And talking about the offer, we've actually got 2 months for free. It's a special offer for January, and then it goes up to $7.99 after, within the third month. So just onto readly.com or your local app store.
Well, we will maintain with a slight variation our usual concluding questions. First of all, Ranj, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
I have, absolutely.
Excellent. And the next critical question is, I mean, apart from obviously looking to appoint you as our official interior design specialist, which I think would work wonderfully, will you be able to join us again in the not-too-distant future? Will you come back, Ranj?
I would love to. Absolutely love to, Alex. It's always a pleasure speaking to you. So, yeah, definitely.
Orange Begley, from Readly, Managing Director and, of course, Chief Content Officer. Huge thanks and happy reading on Readly.
Thank you, Alex. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Well, I think you can actually look back historically and say the reason we are where we are in terms of civilization is probably due to the four T's. What are the four T's? Well, the telegraph, timetables, and trains. Maybe we can actually add a fifth T to that today because we've got the awesomely talented railway historian and enthusiast, of course, Tim Dunn with us. Tim, how are you, sir?
What an introduction. Thank you very much. I'm very well, thank you.
Well, I mean, I figured without the timetable, we would not even be doing this now because obviously we needed a timetable to ensure that trains were arriving on time and all the rest of its pieces. And to actually think of a time before the 19th century and so on where people didn't used to have their lives dominated by times, it's led to all sorts of things, including some fantastic architecture.
Yeah, absolutely. What a remarkable introduction, because you've nailed it, really. You know, the railways did bring across the UK, indeed the world, standardisation of time. And one of the, there's actually a lovely example of this. I'm sure some of your listeners will know, not far away from you, up in Bristol, there's Bristol Exchange. And the Bristol Exchange clock, of course, has got a difference on it. It's got two different minute hands on it, about 10 minutes apart, one showing Bristol time and one showing London or railway time. Mm. And actually, right across the country, a lot of people's clocks in the 19th century actually did show railway time or indeed local time. And it's fascinating just how those battles across the country, actually in different villages and towns and boroughs, got played out as people decided they wanted to either retain their local time defiantly, either ahead or behind of London. But it was a Great Western Railway coming down to Somerset that really kind of put Somerset back onto London time.
Perhaps we should actually set up a kind of another campaign, a bit like the Brexit people, basically, who turn around and say, OK, we want our timetables back. No, let's not start that. Could be a whole new world, but still.
What a world of confusion I can imagine happening then. What a terrifying idea.
Well, you know, what the hey. Now, staying with the West Country momentarily in terms of that, of course, there are some fabulous architectural structures actually all around Britain. I mean, you don't just have to watch a Harry Potter movie to actually see the way in which viaducts and aqueducts and things can actually be important in terms of bridges, etc. But also the railway stations themselves, really. I mean, this was really a tremendous celebration of an empire really at the heart or going approaching its apex and really demonstrating that actually in terms of travel and transport for railways in particular, there were some superb examples of architecture across the base.
Oh, hugely, yeah. You've got to remember that in the very early years of the railways, people were terrified of trains. You know, vicars reckoned that, or there was a vicar, I think, said that, you know, it was going to turn the milk in the cows sour as the trains went past. So human beings
were not meant to travel at such speeds.
No, the air would be sucked out of your lungs. The train went through the tunnel at 20 miles an hour. The early railways were there and the stations were built to try and prove that they were established, that they were there and established in antiquity, and that they were reliable and were decent investments as well, and they could be trusted. So they were there to kind of promote this idea of safety and solidarity, perhaps. So you have these wonderful endeavours there, people sort of, you know, these railways conquering effectively, county by county, area by area, and people investing in them. And sometimes, you know, these railways would build wonderful structures to try and convince local landowners that they were, you know, worthy of further investment. And often landowners would say, you must build a beautiful bridge to cross my land, otherwise you can't come through it. You have to build a diversion instead. So there's a whole variety of architecture and different sort of designs happening from the sort of the late, very late Georgian period, you know, the 1820s. Right the way through into the Victorian time, a massive variety of different styles happening, of different railway companies trying to do things and experimenting in different ways.
And this, of course, ties in very neatly, of course, to an awesomely wonderful new series, which indeed you're hosting, Tim, and who better to actually host this, called The Architecture the Railways Built, which launches, a whole range of sort of factors from that point of view. I mean, looking across this, I mean, it's more than just train spotting, Tim. This is really kind of looking at the whole infrastructure that's been put into place. And I mean, looking at a whole range of sort of things, whether it's Wemyss Bay Station, Clyde, Blackfriars Station, Central London. I mean, was this a dream job from your good self as a railway enthusiast?
it absolutely was. I must admit, I actually approached some producers about this idea a couple of years ago and said, I really would love to talk about the buildings. Everyone talks about the trains, but actually this is actually a programme that sort of talks about railways, but it isn't for people necessarily who just like trains. This is a programme that I wanted to make to show for everybody who loves interesting buildings and stories and places and people. So yeah, there are some trains in it occasionally, but it's really actually about the stories and the fascinating designs and the beautiful stuff and hidden things and forgotten things that we can celebrate across the UK and indeed continental Europe as well. So I'm hoping we show interesting, beautiful stuff.
I should imagine, Tim. I was going to say, I should imagine, Tim, that you still probably have occasional moments where you will wake up in a cold sweat if anybody ever mentions the beaching axe to your good self, because clearly on that basis. Yep.
Well, yeah, I'm not entirely anti-beaching. I think he did the right things he needed to do at the time, information he had, with my historian hat on. But also, if it wasn't for beaching, we probably wouldn't have, a lot of these preserved railways that we have now. And people wouldn't have the opportunity to get involved in the railways. And I think probably the 1960s and 70s, post-beaching, saw this groundswell of support and people realising what it was we almost lost. And the idea of building conservation happened at that time. So actually, in some ways, I think this country, although we've lost an awful lot and communities have lost their links to places, there has been we probably wouldn't have this interesting view of railway architecture that we do now.
Presumably also the notion of railway hotels that often sort of emerged very close by to transit corridors, etc. They're also kind of a byproduct of the travelling experience.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, one of the episodes in the series, I get to go and stay in the Midland Hotel in Morecambe, which is this fabulous Art Deco thing on the coast. If anyone's ever seen something, it's probably in an episode of Poirot or two, I think, from memory, at least in Agatha Christie. it definitely featured in there a few times. But yeah, it's some beautiful things and wonderful stuff that people stayed in, used. So it's not about stations. It's about the engine sheds and why they look like they do. Let's see, hotels, we've got signal boxes. And indeed, often it's about the different kind of the competition you get in different cities about local stuff. So actually, again, near you guys, we've got in Bath. We go to Bath Spa and Bath Green Park Station to go and look at both of those as to why the Somerset and Dorset Railway built its station in that side of the city and how they designed it and what's in there now. It's actually a fabulous collection of farmers' markets and restaurants and cafes and shops, and then Bath Spa Station as well. So yeah, it's all about these interconnections and buildings and styles and weird stuff you find alongside them and the viaducts and tunnels too.
Well, absolutely. I mean, again, there were so many things we could actually talk about. And I'll give a plug, obviously, to our colleagues within the North East and, of course, within Siren Radio, based in Lincoln, of course, which is the sort of whole essence of where the whole process is going. What were the most special moments that you had in making this series, Tim? I mean, were there some times where literally your breath was taken away when you saw something like the Royal Albert Bridge spanning the River Tamar on the border of Devon and Cornwall, for instance? Was there anything like that which you thought, wow, this is fantastic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just say, the one in Devon and Cornwall, absolutely brilliant. Absolutely phenomenal. There were so many wonderful things that I saw. I say, going into places like Sheffield Station as well, and walking, going into the vaults beneath Sheffield Station, because a whole river runs below the platforms. I didn't realise this until I went there. And actually, the whole station is built on big brick piers, effectively, and stone piers suspended above the river, all these platforms. And then going to Bennerley Viaduct in Nottinghamshire, again, not a million miles from you guys, and you know, this huge iron giant, they call it, strides across the valley, and to have this chance to walk out on this massive viaduct, now disused, but have a chance to walk along it before the public are allowed on it, probably next year, and they're building a walkway along it. It's just phenomenal. What a privilege. And to have a day like today, actually, with a storm coming, and having rain against our faces and trying to do a piece to camera. It shows
the consummate professionalism that you bring to the piece, Tim. That's the important thing.
It's huge amount. amounts of fun, huge amounts of fun.
Well, I must admit, one sort of interesting sort of side product, when I first saw the River Tamar as a child, and I was told it was the River Tamar, I thought, why have they named a river after a minor character in the Return of the Archons episode of Star Trek? But that maybe shows another kind of aspect that I'll go into, but still, that's sort of reliant. Tim, where can people actually access the architecture that Railways built and find out more about some of the fantastic sites you've covered?
Well, it's on every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock on the Yesterday channel, which is on Freeview. It's on all the catch-up things as well. It's on Freeview, all different things. So every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock for the next 10 weeks. And it's jam-packed full of, about 40 remarkable different railway buildings and structures.
And it's also worth following Tim Dunn again on Facebook, amongst other things, to actually stay in touch with the tremendous enthusiasm you bring to the world, Tim. And we wrap up with two final questions. As ever, the kind of customer satisfaction ones. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us, thanks to the timetable today, Tim Dunn?
I had a brilliant time. Thank you so much.
And in which case, can we look forward to maybe connecting with you again sometime in the not too distant future? Will you return?
I do hope so. I do hope so. We're currently out now. We're filming a third series already as we speak. So I look forward to coming and talking to you again.
Tim Dunn, television presenter, railway enthusiast, and extraordinaire. Huge thanks and happy travelling, Tim.
Thank you so much, and to you.
Now, clearly, the last 10 or 11 months will have had impacts of varying degrees on varying folks. But the one thing you can guarantee is that people have been suffering from stress and coping with a whole range of things is all tied in with mental health. In fact, almost half of adults feel that the pandemic has impacted negatively on their mental health well-being, with obviously sleep problems, low mood, joining stress as the top major concerns, as well as anxiety, of course. Now, the best person to actually speak to, I'm sure, to actually address this from the point of view of Public Health England and more, is the fabulous Dr. Max Pemberton. How are you, Max?
Hello. I love being described as being fabulous. That's great.
Where you are, Max, and I've got to ask you, before we move on to mental health, is it true that your parents originally wanted you to go to Mars Bars and Mars Bar Factory to actually start off a whole thing? The medical profession would have lost so much.
That is true. They were, they didn't want me to go on and do A-levels and go to medical school. They were very keen for me to go and do an engineering apprenticeship in the Mars factory, because I'm originally from Slough, and which is where all your Mars bars come from. That's what they wanted. But yeah, I think they're quite pleased I'm a doctor now. So,
well, precisely. I mean, I always like to think of Slough as effectively being the home of Gerry Anderson's Thunderbirds, but that's another line entirely. Moving on, of course, that the reason I mentioned that at the start of this is, you know, if we're talking about young people in general, we're talking about people across the base, parents as well. Those are kind of natural stressors in terms of what people actually want to do career-wise, etc. Surely they will be magnified even more so with respect to what we're having here within the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's been really difficult actually for all different types of people, different age groups and so on, in slightly different ways. And I think it's one of the things that I've, you know, as a clinician, as a doctor, have been sort of interested in, is the way that actually, the phrase, you know, we're all in this together, and in many ways we are, but also everybody's kind of had a quite different experience of lockdown. Some people have been incredibly lonely because they've been socially isolated, whereas actually for some people it's been the flip side of that. They've suddenly had to find, you know, they're living alongside people in very close proximity, kind of often day in and day out, you know, suddenly their partners are living, sort of staying all the time at home, they're working from home, their kids are at home. So people have had three sorts of different experiences. And certainly for children, I think this has been a really extraordinary, really difficult time for lots of children. You know, lots of children have had the security and the safety actually of school taken away from them. You know, I work for quite deprived communities. And it's something that we've all been very, very worried about. There's lots of children now, you know, who don't necessarily have access to lots of green space, whose parents maybe are sort of struggling with their own mental health problems. And actually this campaign from Public Health England actually did do a specific campaign just for children, in fact, back in September, and all the stuff is still on their website. So it's something that's been concerning me. And then on the other end of the age spectrum, older people, of course, they've had to be kind of deal with the anxiety of the virus and know that they're more susceptible, they're more at risk, but also lots of them are on their own and are facing kind of financial difficulties as well. So there's been lots and lots of different pressures that have been there. And certainly, you know, so we've seen a real impact on people's sort of just general mental well-being.
And it's going to seem fairly clear, I would have thought, in terms of, well, it's obvious why mental health is important. But actually, just from the point of view of a medical perspective, Max, why is it important to actually maintain that positive side of things? I mean, is it just a case of, well, thoughts become things, we need to choose the good ones? I mean, it's often seen as almost a glib phrase to say, oh, focus on the positive, when people might say, but there's nothing positive that I can find.
Well, I would say there is always something positive. But I think, you know, you're touching upon a really important point, which is that, you know, this particular campaign, Every Mind Matters, isn't actually, we're not thinking about sort of addressing people's mental illness as such. So things like, you know, clinical depression and generalized anxiety and things like that. We're trying to take a step back before it gets to that stage and help people's sort of general mental well-being. So a bit like with our physical health, if we're feeling a bit run down, we don't necessarily have an actual illness, we're just not feeling quite ourselves. You know, we would sort of take some small steps just to make ourselves feel a bit better, sort of, you know, look after ourselves. So we might sort of, you know, take the day off work, or, you know, kind of go to bed early, make sure we're eating properly, you know, start pick up our exercise again. So just as we would do that with our physical health, this campaign is really encouraging us to start thinking about doing that with our mental health. So just kind of, you know, sort of checking ourselves, sort of monitoring how we're feeling, what sort of small things, what small changes, small kind of tweaks can we do to just kind of make sure that maybe we're sort of looking after ourselves as best possible with regard to our mental well-being.
And clearly, over the last few years, we've come across things like mindfulness, the importance of meditation, prayer, of course, comes back into place from that point of view. I mean, those are things which you can actually do literally just sitting down and just taking time out from that point of view. But also, presumably, just a brisk walk can also be impactful in terms of also getting the old endorphins flowing.
Definitely. I mean, I'm a fan of mindfulness. I think it can be really, really useful, but there's actually other things as well. Sometimes people struggle with the idea of mindfulness. And actually, you know, certainly if you've got anxiety, it's all very well saying people, you know, just focus on your breathing. But actually sometimes doing something can also be you know, really helpful. And there's a whole movement called craftfulness, which is a kind of the antithesis of mindfulness. Instead of rather doing nothing, you actually do something. And I've sort of really loved this idea. I've started to learn Latin, for example, over the lockdown. You know, I've had a friend who's picked up crochet, you know, sort of things like that. We're actually sort of doing something active to sort of take your mind off maybe the kind of current circumstances. So, yes, so, you know, there's all sorts of stuff you can do proactively. And you're right. And then things like exercise as well. You know, it's important to remember that just because we're in a lockdown, that doesn't mean that we can't exercise. In fact, the government is encouraging us to exercise. So to make sure you use that. You know, you're given a license to leave your house to exercise. So do that every day. You know, it doesn't, if you're not able to go for a jog or anything like that, you know, just go for a brisk walk. It's fine. You know, just, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, whatever you can manage.
Yes, I know that a couple of our colleagues have decided to actually take up the piano. In one case, because of Rosie, she actually started learning to play the ukulele. So extraordinary. Wow. In terms of those sort of things. It's very, very strange, but still, I'm sure it'd be wonderful. I mean, in terms of actually developing the sort of notion of this particular campaign and managing the uncertainty, I mean, you've already shared some very important aspects, Max. Would you say it's important to also get a personalised action plan together so you can actually deal with stress, anxiety and work through those kind of processes?
Definitely. So that's one of the things, actually, on the website, on the Every Mind Matters website. It's got lots of kind of like tools and resources in general, and it's got lots of kind of things to signpost people off to maybe get some help around things like their finances and so on and so on. But also embedded within it is this this kind of mind plan. So you know, different people, depending on your circumstances, you're going to find certain things more helpful maybe than other things. So, you know, there isn't a kind of like one fits all template here. So this mind plan offers you the opportunity to kind of pull together all the things that you personally find helpful in sort of just managing your mental well-being, and kind of get it almost a little bit like a toolkit, so that if you do find yourself struggling at all, you've got this, you've got it already there, and you can then work your way work through it. You know, because often the time when you know when you're really struggling, that's the time actually when people, you know, at least able often to pull together the things that actually help them. So it's really helpful if you've already done that, you've got it there ready, should you have a difficult time.
And you certainly got some substantive supporters, a coalition of top supporters, really, with respect to MIND, the Samaritans, Young Minds, obviously involved with this in terms of mental health charities. So, again, I think we've also managed to get away from the stigma that used to be very much the accompanying line of things occasionally, particularly in Britain, I think, with respect to mental well-being.
Yeah, we're doing much better. I think, you know, I've been working mental health now for, well, about 20 years. And, you know, I remember at the very beginning, people being a bit like, why on earth would you want to do that? Like, you know, it's very sort of depressing and, oh, you know, there's a real sort of Cinderella speciality within medicine. And actually, you know, I think certainly the last couple of years, for a variety of reasons, you know, I think the Royal Family have actually really helped with this. You know, sort of people now feel sort of much more positive about mental health. They're sort of interested in it, they want to understand it. We sort of realise that actually that we've got lots of active treatments and stuff that can really help people. And it's sort of really changed. And the government has made it sort of a priority, sort of helping people with regard to their mental health. So now it's a really sort of dynamic, exciting, interesting area to be working in.
Well, there we are, you see. And just think, if you'd actually gone through your parents' advice, you would have ended up producing Mars bars. Well, fine in there, it's its own way, but perhaps not as healthy as the work you're actually doing. So that's very important. Max, finally, where can people go to find out further information about the Every Mind Matters Public Health England campaign?
So there's a dedicated website, and it's everymindmatters.co.uk.
Dr. Max Pemberton, as ever, a delight. Keep on keeping on, and stay well and healthy.
Put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
That's not the moment that you're embracing right now.
Oh, dear.
Regardless, it's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.